And welcome to this week's podcast with me, Bar Huberman. This week I'm joined by expert HR employment law editor Chin Mu to discuss some of the employment law developments in the pipeline, the Immigration Act 2016 and the Enterprise Act 2016. We're going to explain what the changes are and what they mean for you. Let's start with the Immigration Act 2016. Chin, what's this new legislation about?
The Act introduces quite a few measures to crack down on illegal working.
There's already an offence of employing illegal workers, isn't there?
Right. So now there's a broader definition of the offence, which comes with an increased maximum penalty for employers, and new powers for immigration officers to close businesses that employ illegal workers. Immigration officers will also be able to search and seize documents related to illegal working.
So it seems that a tougher stance is going to be taken towards businesses that employ illegal migrants.
Definitely. The expanded offence means that if you employ someone who's here illegally and you have reasonable cause to believe that he's an illegal migrant, if you continue to employ him, you could receive a fine, a prison sentence, or both.
So this is about making it easier to prosecute employers who deliberately, as the government says, turn a blind eye to employing illegal migrants.
That's right. And if a business persists in employing an illegal worker, an immigration officer will be able to close it down and to ask a court to place it under immigration compliance requirements.
There's also a new immigration skills charge for businesses that use migrant workers, isn't there? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Right. This is to do with legal migrant workers. The charge is part of the government's attempt to decrease the UK's reliance on skilled migrant labour.
But it's only going to apply to migrant workers from outside the EEA?
Right. So the charge will apply only to organisations that sponsor Tier 2 migrants from outside the EEA. There won't be a charge for using European workers or migrants who aren't sponsored.
How much are we looking at?
The Department for Business, Innovation and Skills' March press release gives a figure of £1,000 per worker per year. Smaller charitable organisations will pay a reduced rate of £364.
Are there any other changes brought about by the Immigration Act that employers need to know about?
Yes. So the Act also creates a new Director of Labour Market Enforcement. This role will coordinate enforcement of the national minimum wage, protection for workers in vulnerable sectors, and enforcement of regulations in the recruitment industry. For public sector employers, there will also be a new English language requirement for customer-facing roles.
So Chin, what can employers do now to make sure they'll be compliant with the new Immigration Act requirements?
The most important thing is to ensure that you have strong processes in place for checking immigration documents, both before workers start and when worker visas are due to expire. You should keep records of the checks in order to show that you've conducted your due diligence. For many of the other new Immigration Act requirements, keep a lookout for developments. The government will be issuing regulations on how the immigration skills charge will work. And for public sector employers, there'll be a code of practice on the English language requirements for customer-facing roles.
And when will these Immigration Act changes come to effect?
The 12th of July of this year is the start date for the expanded offence for employing illegal workers, the Director of Labour Market Enforcement role, and immigration officer search and seizure powers. For the immigration skills charge, the government's indicated that it wants it to take effect in April 2017, but that date hasn't been confirmed. And then we're still waiting for dates for the immigration officer powers to close businesses and the English language requirements for public sector workers.
Thanks very much, Chin. So let's turn now to the Enterprise Act 2016. This covers a number of very different employment law aspects, doesn't it?
Yes. So there are three areas of interest to employers. The Sunday working section will be relevant for employers in the retail sector, while the apprenticeship and the public exit payment provisions will be of interest to public sector employers.
Hadn't the government's plans for Sunday working been defeated in the House of Commons?
So the government had initially wanted to give local councils the power to make rules on Sunday trading, which would have allowed them to increase Sunday trading hours. But as you mentioned, this was voted down in Parliament.
Okay, so can you tell us about the changes that are now contained in the Enterprise Act?
The government went ahead and gave shop workers more Sunday working rights. They'll be able to give notice that they don't want to work additional hours on Sunday. Also, the notice period for Sunday working opt-out and objections to working additional hours are going to be decreasing from 3 months to 1 month for workers in large shops.
Could you give us a sense of how these changes are going to affect employers?
It really depends on the uptake of the new right. Shop and bedding workers can already object to Sunday working, unless they were hired to work on Sundays only. So with the changes, shop owners will basically have even more Sunday scheduling constraints. Another thing to keep in mind is that workers are protected from detriment, dismissal, and redundancy selection for exercising their Sunday working rights.
And that applies to both their old rights and the new rights that you've just talked about.
Yes, so there's no minimum service period for this protection.
And I understand that when these changes come into effect, employers are going to have to issue all of their shop workers with an explanatory notice of their Sunday working rights within 2 months.
That's right. So we don't yet have an anticipated commencement date for the changes.
Okay, let's move on now to the apprenticeship sections of the Enterprise Act. What kinds of changes are we looking at here?
The most relevant part for employers are the new targets for public sector apprenticeships. These are part of the government's initiative to increase total apprenticeship starts in England from 2.4 million to 3 million by 2020.
That sounds like quite an ambitious figure. Do we know yet how these targets are going to be set?
There was a consultation on targets applying to public bodies with over 250 employees at a rate of 2.3% of the workforce. So if a public body has 1,000 employees, its target would be 23 apprenticeship starts per year. There aren't any draft regulations yet, so we're still waiting for confirmation of this approach.
And there's another change relating to apprenticeships, isn't there? That's the change to the use of the term apprenticeship.
That's right. So the Act makes it an offence for course and training providers to call their programs apprenticeships if they don't fall under the definition of statutory apprenticeships. In practice, this won't have much impact on employers because training provided during employment is carved out of the offence.
Okay, that's helpful to know.
Right. The government doesn't want to deter employers from offering their own apprenticeships.
All right. I'd like now to turn to the public sector exit payments cap in the Enterprise Act. In our 22nd of April podcast, Laurie Anstis discusses the three different pieces of regulation on public sector exit payments, one of which is in the Enterprise Act. This has been quite a controversial addition to the Act, hasn't it? Why is that?
Well, the government introduced public sector exit payment restrictions on the basis that it would eliminate six-figure payoffs, in theory, to high-earning employees. Hence, the cap is set at £95,000. The application of the limit, though, is quite wide. It includes contractual notice periods, redundancy payments, settlement or conciliation payments, and pension payments. So several unions have pointed out that the cap will be a concern for low-earning but long-service employees who are clearly not the intended target of the legislation.
Sure, so that's quite an extensive definition. Can you give us an example of how this would be a problem?
Imagine that a long-service but low-wage employee is made redundant short of her retirement age and has to start taking her pension. However, because of the early retirement, a big lump sum payment has to be made to the pension scheme for her to receive unreduced benefits. So the cap would include this payment. And if the required payment exceeds the limit, the worker will either have to take a reduced pension or contribute a lump sum herself in order to receive an unreduced pension.
Okay, I can see now how that would be a significant concern for employees who are close to retirement.
Right, and there's also a concern with the cap including settlement payments such as for unfair dismissal, discrimination, and whistleblowing claims.
How so?
Well, settlement payments give parties flexibility to end contentious matters at an early stage without having to go through lengthy legal proceedings. With the cap, claimants with high-value claims, such as for whistleblowing, will be more likely to go through long and costly litigation where historically they may have accepted a settlement payment.
Okay, so this cap has potentially quite wide ramifications then. When is it expected to be introduced?
We haven't been given a firm date yet, but the draft regulations themselves say that they won't be introduced before the 1st of October 2016.
Thanks, Chin. We've covered quite a few topics today, and if you want to learn more about the issues discussed in today's podcast, check out the Future Development section of our Employment Law Manual. And to keep abreast of when these changes are coming into force, you can refer to the legal timetable. This summer's other hot topics are also fully covered on Expert HR, including a podcast on Brexit, which was published on the 10th of June. Also look out for the podcast on the Locke holiday pay case, which will be available after the hearing on the 15th of July. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Bar Huberman. We're back next Friday with another podcast, but until then, it's goodbye from us.